Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. When I say the word mixtape, what comes to your mind? Do you see an actual cassette tape, maybe a mix CD, or do you think about a playlist on Spotify? For me, I think about the big box in my bedroom that houses the dozens of mixtapes given to me by friends, exes, and through tape exchanges. They're the type of memento I just can't get rid of, and one I still actively make, but I don't hear much about them on the radio. So on today's show, I'm bringing you stories and viewpoints all about mixtapes, with something everyone can enjoy, whether you're a diehard who still makes tapes, like me, or someone who's never even touched one before. Our first story today is a good introduction into the secret little worlds mixtapes can create in our lives. It comes from the team at WBEZ's 848, who worked with Found Magazine co-founder Jason Bittner to create this rundown of what people are thinking about when they're making a mixtape. Starting with etiquette.
I'm sticking with you, 'cause I'm made out of glue.
I think it's really important to put a title myself. I mean, I think it's kind of a cop-out to not put a title. You know, it's almost like, I'm going to let you figure out how to read this thing, you know, as opposed to being like a little bit more bold and confident and saying, this is what it is.
Maybe like a special saying that you have, it forms an extra dialogue, something that you would say to each other, like pinky hold.
The cassette which I received is Scissors and Snare Drums.
Sleepyhead Fiona.
Names that you choose oftentimes refer to the time period in which you've given it to them.
Christmas Mix, 12/26/97.
Oxford England Mix. Sounds how you like it.
I would say the name of that cassette, most of the time it sums up the entire reason one is giving it.
I woke up on the morning of my 20th birthday. My boyfriend was standing in my room. There was breakfast on a tray and a mixtape that said, good morning, you're 20.
Back in high school, I had these toenails that were just awful. And so I would spend a lot of time after school soaking my feet in Epsom salt. And so my then girlfriend gave me this tape. It was called Music to Soak Your Toes To. You know, and I thought that was very sweet.
My girlfriend, I remember giving her a cassette, and it probably has one of the worst cassette titles ever, and obvious titles, which is Music for a Hot Summer Night. And, you know, yeah, I probably didn't think that title out as clearly as I should have. But it worked, and I'm still with her.
What were the skies like when you were young?
Making the artwork was something that I was obsessed with. I mean, I would never give a tape that didn't have artwork. It was just, like, shameful.
I think, like the title, the artwork is also showing how much time and energy someone has put into this.
I personally love the Sharpie. I think the Sharpie is a cassette standby.
I think that that's what's missing.
Maybe you have a blue and a black and a red.
Take images from magazines and make collages and whatnot.
A 5-fold-out card with little stickers attached.
And they would often get so thick you couldn't even put them back in the tape.
Glitter. I remember getting glitter on mixtapes. Wow, this person really cares and really spent a lot of time.
I think I remember wrapping one in foil and just totally ruining the tape, like demagnetizing the tape because I was using metal aluminum foil.
But I guess what I find most endearing about the tapes I've received over the years is just how awful the artwork is. And so that in itself made, you know, the artwork sort of precious to me because, well, you know, it's all about the effort.
There's a lot of directions that you can go with your artwork. So by doing no artwork, total cop-out, and you may as well not be given a tape.
Purple and red.
Creating a mixtape is so much about who you're making it for.
Sometimes the music will be spliced with something really salacious or lewd by way of trying to communicate a secret desire, for instance.
Maybe it's a little bit more innocent in the beginning, and then like you move into some Rick James, like, you know, Marvin Gaye, and get a little bit more to the point.
Nothing says longing better than a mixtape.
Let
receiving a tape from someone that maybe you weren't ready to hear their message is definitely...
Ooh, that's bad. That is incredibly awkward because, you know, you have to respond.
You don't want to be so forthright and say, like, oh, I've got a boyfriend.
But it's not anything that you can ignore. You can't pretend that you didn't understand what, you know, was meant by the tape, particularly if the music is really explicit in its intentions.
So please, 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 let me, let me, let me, let me get what I want.
Why is he sending me this tape? What does he want from me? You know, he doesn't know me, and unfortunately for him, he put a whole bunch of, you know, slow indie rock songs on there, and I had no interest in that at all, so it kind of killed the chances of the relationship, probably, but we ended up being friends.
My solution was to make him a tape in return, and all the music on the return tape was utterly platonic. It was terrible. Just there was no romantic content at all. And I hoped that via this tape I would be sending a message.
So for once in my life, let me get what I want. Lord knows it would be the first time.
I remember actually one moment on one of my favorite tapes that I accidentally hit record instead of play, and I realized that I had recorded me working. But I was so upset, just, yeah, devastated, because I felt like, you know, that relationship was over. I wasn't going to call a guy up and say to remake it, and it wouldn't mean the same thing anymore. Something about this being a really unique object set in time, sequenced specifically, is irreplaceable.
Had I been friends with you at the time, I would have told you to punch the tab so then you can't record over them.
When a tape breaks, it is just a tragedy.
But it's part of the medium.
I had a couple of tapes break when I was younger, and I think part of that is because you listen to them so much. And initially, it was a total bummer. I mean, you know, it's almost like you've lost this really important symbol of your time together. But then the handier people will see that as a challenge.
I would patch them back together.
I specifically remember taking like a ballpoint pen and flipping it over and having to like wind it out and find that spot and splice it together.
You can take out one of those little precision screwdrivers and...
You would just take the damaged area, take a piece of scotch tape, put it on there, cut it with a razor blade.
Snap it back together and you are back in business. So initially, if you're not very handy, that might be the end of the tape. But I think that for someone who's got some skills, it's a challenge, and then it's almost like the tape being reborn.
What do I do with the tape after the breakup? I keep them. I think I have most every tape that has survived moves.
I've always held on to the tapes. I think they're almost more sentimental than photographs of a person.
Depending on what kind of relationship and what kind of breakup occurred, I actually considered the quality of the music on the tape.
If I'm really angry, and I've done this in the past, which is just a terrible thing to have done, but I had a tape that I just kind of broke with a hammer. And the worst thing I ever did probably was take a tape that I had made for someone and taking it back. So, I mean, there's kind of a lot of vindictive behavior is encouraged by the presence of a mixtape in your life from this romance that's gone wrong.
It seems impossible for me to just chuck them into the trash. They have to, like, accidentally get lost in a move or something, because I won't throw them away.
Yeah, when you break up with an ex, you definitely keep the mixtapes. I would say I've thrown out love letters, but I wouldn't throw out a mixtape.
It's like a memory holder. And are you going to want to hold on to those memories, or do you want to expunge them? Oh, baby, I was blind to let it go. But now, since I have seen you, it is gone.
That piece was produced for the WBEZ show 848. You can find a link to their archive of stories on our website, kalw.org. Click on the spot.
Stereo home, trying to get it right. But what to put on first? Maybe some Funboy 3, something to let her know just what she means to me. They never appreciate the time and care spent.
You're listening to The Spot, the show that features the best stories from podcasts and independent radio producers. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. When I first heard that last piece, I realized that I have many people in my life with plenty to say about mixtapes, too. But there's one person who really nails down why I think mixtapes seem to never completely disappear from our popular culture.
A lot of it just becomes down to, like, just the concept of the artifact, which is the tape.
That's Matt Delight. He's an illustrator here in San Francisco, an expert mixtape maker, and a dang good talker. I recently visited him in his home studio, and he explained to me why, for him, mixtapes feel so personal and powerful compared to, say, mix CDs or digital playlists.
It's like when you're listening to a mixtape, you know you're with the person making that tape, that they've had to put these songs on one at a time. And again, they're not grabbing it from a playlist. They actually have to play that whole song. Tapes are infinitely more personal. They're infinitely more radical in that way. And that's why I like them more than anything. You know, it's, you know that you've gotten like a really special treat when you've gotten a mixtape. And actually it's really fun because it's like, it's fun to do the work on the spine and it's fun to like do the work on like the back end. And it's really almost like when you're making that mixtape, there's that point when you're actually like making your own album art, right? You know, it's like you're part of everything, right? You're part of production and blah, blah, blah. And so, yeah, there's such a part of complete ownership that I get from, or more than any other thing I do or work on. Oh. They're great.
The reasons why I keep tapes around is partially because of all the care and thought and time that went into them, but also because of the way they can so clearly symbolize important relationships I had. If you collect tapes, I bet you can sympathize. Matt gets it.
So I've got a bunch of tapes from my ex-girlfriend Liz, and I was thinking about how I love listening to them because it's like listening to Liz. Like, these feelings and these emotions and these things all live in this tape, you know, and we can visit this spot. Now, there's points where it gets kind of melancholy, where it's like, oh, what, never what? But you knew that was never going to be, you know, and even as you're making that tape and even as she was making that tape, it wasn't like she was like, this is going to win him back. It's almost like acknowledging like this was a thing that was. And we've made this thing to acknowledge that, and that's where it's going to be. But yeah, you can now view this like a tombstone or whatever. And look, this was it. This was, now it's buried and blah, blah, blah. But you still have this artifact, this curio of this life or love or whatever forever. Mm.
Matt has made dozens upon dozens of mixtapes in his life and has received just as many in return. I asked what the key to making a great mixtape was.
For me, when I'm making a mixtape, it's not open air. It's me listening on headphones and waiting for like that moment where like the inner third eye opens, you know, where you've like hit the song and you're like, yes, that's it. These are the songs in this order. It is a jammer. I think it's interesting because everyone has their own thing about it. Like, any person can do it. And there's all sorts of aspects and facets to it. Like, The reason why you're making it alone is fascinating. And why do I make them? All sorts of reasons. Because I think that's generally mostly like feeling and love based or whatever. Like there's usually that kind of reason. But again, a lot of it's just to impress people for whatever reason. Because if you're making a hate tape, you want to impress someone with that hate tape. You know what I'm saying? You want to go out like, f*** you. I'm going out on top. Right? I mean, you're not going to give them songs on a hate tape. I bet they're going to be jammers that stick it to you. And at the same time, you're like, oh, I'm glad I break up with that person. Or why did I hurt that person? Ah, oh, that tape's so good.
I think everyone could relate to the point that when you share music with someone, there's an element of you trying to impress them, even in a hate mix. And all of the tips that Matt brought up about mix making apply whether your mix is on a tape or not. And though I still make mixtapes to this day, I also recognize that's not the only way to have that particular conversation about musical taste. We're in a time where you can send songs to loved ones via streaming playlists you've curated, or you can text and email links to videos of songs to friends throughout the day. It's wonderful how easy it's become to have these conversations in song form. Now, I want to look at making the perfect playlist in a digital realm. The podcast How to Do Everything lives up to its name. They've covered how to drive a rally car, tips to keep your cereal from going soggy, and even how to properly swim a lap. In this episode, hosts Mike Danforth and Ian Chillig help a man plan the perfect playlist for his workplace.
Just so you can keep us straight, I'm Mike.
And I'm Ian.
And we host the NPR podcast, How to Do Everything.
We got a question from Leon, and he just got a new job. He's working in a design studio. And he and his coworkers love listening to music.
But they listen to Pandora, and they keep hearing the same songs over and over again. They're getting tired of it. So he wants to know how to find some new music.
So, Leon, what's like one song that you've been hearing over and over that's driving you crazy?
There's this one song, Mad World.
How does it go? What song is it?
Mad World. I'm sure you know that one.
Like, dude, just sing the first few verses.
You want me to sing it?
Sure.
All around me are familiar faces, worn out places,
yeah.
Worn out places.
Not really singing there, but okay.
Well, we'll... I think we have someone who can help you.
Yeah. We're going to do our best for you. So.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike and Ian.
Hey.
You bet.
Thanks, you. All right. On the line now is Lizzie Goodman. She's a music and pop culture journalist, and she's here to help Leon pick out some new music for his office.
First things first, Lizzie, you obviously can't please everybody. So what's one song that people are going to like, and it's not going to drive, you know, just one person crazy?
Right, because one person's perfect song for the moment is somebody else's, oh my God, I can't believe you're playing that right now. I want to kill myself. Yeah, I mean, I think one of the go-to sort of, when I'm in that space where I'm working on something and it's like every sound that's ever been created by a musician seems to be annoying me, Bob Marley. And I also like reggae, too, for working in general of pretty much any type because it seems like, I don't know, sometimes when I was thinking about this, I was like, all right, would I count reggae as like, upbeat music, like to amp people up if they need that, or would I count it as like chill out music? It's like sort of both.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, let's make a little mix for Leon, and we'll do when you need that sort of, I don't want to say lowest common denominator, but when you want to have the best chance of pleasing everybody in the office.
Yes.
A Bob Marley song. What song do you want to play in the office here?
No Woman, No Cry is a really good one. Mm-hmm. That's an obvious selection. I think kind of putting on, as cheesy as this sounds and as much like a frat boy as this makes it sound, like Legend, pretty much anything on Legend is going to make everyone happy.
I have to say, this is a big surprise that you're going with Legend.
Well, listen, we started this conversation by saying let's not say we're going for lowest common denominator, people pleasing, you know, no least possible offense available.
Yeah.
I mean, and right now I'm currently offending like every hardcore nerdy music fan in the entire world, but
we're trying
to make sure that every conceivable member of the office realm is going to be happy.
All right, so here it is, in case you haven't heard it before, some Bob Marley from Legend.
Good friends we have lost.
Okay, so then what do you play?
When you want to bring things down a bit or kind of chill people out, or there's sort of a sense of agitation in the air, there's been a bad conference call, I say you play kind of, I like to play sort of moody electro indie rock.
Okay.
Fever Ray is a good example. I like all the Scandinavians seem to have this down. But one song in particular that I liked is off of the Drive soundtrack, and it's called Night Call by Kavinsky and Love Fox. That style of music really seems to put people in a kind of, no, my day isn't sucking, I'm just in like a cool art film kind of mood moment.
Sure.
Somehow your agitation feels like part of the natural rhythm of like your awesome life as opposed to what it actually is, which is like stress.
Okay, let's hear it then. This is Kavinsky and Love Fox.
I gotta tell you something you don't want to hear. I'm gonna show you where it's dark, but have no fear.
There's something inside you. It's hard to explain. They're talking about you, boy, but you're still the same.
You know, one thing to talk about that I got to think about when I was sort of putting this list together in the first place or thinking about this problem is just film soundtracks in general are a kind of a good way to cheat this. Instead of having to kind of build your own mix from the beginning, which can be really fun but can also in a weird way be stressful. Like you look at your iTunes one day and it's like, ugh, if I knew what to play, I would have played it already. That's the whole point. Like I want someone to choose for me. I think that one thing that I definitely do sometimes is think, God, it would be really awesome to be in, I don't know, a Wim Wenders movie right now. So I'll just play Paris, Texas, you know, and then there you are. And the Drive soundtrack has been one of my favorites and one that a lot of, like, music dorks have been talking about a lot lately as accomplishing exactly what we just described, where it's just like, whatever you're experiencing now is secretly, like, arty and awesome. Like, that's what that soundtrack does.
Let's, so Leon informs us that he has some bands that he and his office mates like.
Yeah.
I'm going to roll them off for you. And
yeah.
If you could add them all together and suggest a new artist that you might not have heard of that would be all these artists added together. Grizzly Bear, Local Natives, Sufjan Stevens, James Taylor, Stevie Wonder. We'll just stop there. Yeah.
Jeez.
What do you think?
The blender version of all those artists. Well, I mean, I definitely noticed that their taste runs towards the kind of mellow and smart, but the kind of music that you can background if you need to, but also like pay attention to and learn the lyrics for if you want to. I would say some of the sort of Scottish bands that have been coming out lately, maybe Twilight Sad would be a good addition for them.
All right, let's hear it.
You don't feel the same when the freeze goes. You die my time, and I'll never go with you tonight. And until the party ends, and until the party when we retire.
So, to wrap up, maybe do you want to close out this mix with a song you love but that would just be horrible to play in any office?
See, I mean, this is tough for me because I've worked in so many music magazines. I'm like, I can't think of a song that I love that would actually be horrible to play in. Okay, no, wait, I've got one.
Okay.
Just as I was saying that, I was like, no,
that was pretty quick, yeah.
So in the 90s, there was this singer, Jan Arden, who had a minor hit with this song, Insensitive, and it is the worst song ever. I mean, it's really excruciating. And I had all of the lyrics, like, handwritten in purple bubble letters and pasted on my bedroom wall. And I insisted to everyone I knew at the time, you know, we were Bjork and Pixies and Nirvana fans. I insisted to all of my fellow music lovers that Jan Arden was the secret genius of songwriting. And given that no one ever came around on this with me. I'm pretty sure that if you played Jan Arden's Insensitive in your office environment, your coworkers would be completely justified in, like, booting you.
Well, we're not here to judge, Lizzie. We're just here to help out Leon, and I think we've done it.
Yep.
Thanks for your help.
My pleasure. It was really fun talking to you guys.
Okay. I guess, Jan Arden, here's Insensitive.
How do you cool your lips after a summer's kiss? How do you rid the sweat after the body?
I'm not going to put you through any more of that song, but I will tell you, if you'd like to find more how-to information from Mike and Ian, you can subscribe to the How to Do Everything podcast on iTunes. And we'll have a link up to their backlog on our website, kalw.org.
Tell me where you are, how to get there, and how long that it takes to take me some song.
That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Look at the homepage for the little blue letters that spell out The Spot. You know, I like to think of The Spot as a form of mixtape. I'm DJing stories, putting the best ones in, and mixing them together into a conversation. For you. So please, join the conversation. Tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have a suggestion for a podcast we should feature, please drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. A big thank you to my special guest, Matt Delight. You can find images of some of his mixtape cover artwork up on kalw.org as well. Tune in next Thursday, same time, for another episode of The Spot, only on KALW San Francisco.
Make me a mixtape, don't leave out here.